All right. Hey, everyone. This is John, the View My Seats podcast, checking in with my Uncle Bruce. Long
Hello,
time.
John.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Lifelong Cubs fan. And I think what everyone wants to know at this moment, we're at the All-Star break, and I think what everyone would really like to know at this moment is how excited you must be to have Travis Wood as your lone representative from the Chicago Cubs at the All-Star game.
Well, I'm happy for him. I think he's put in great work. The problem with being a Cub fan is you don't know how long these guys are going to be Cubs, and then you've got to make the adjustment when they become a pitcher for a contender. It looks like we might hang on to Travis Wood for a couple of years. Don't let him go for a while, but the state of the Cubs right now is so much in flux. Everybody or anybody could be gone before the season's end, and that includes Travis Wood.
I appreciate how genuine you were with your response. I asked that question in jest simply because I don't think there's anyone out there who really cares about Travis Wood at the All-Star game.
No, but actually, as a fan of any team, you kind of get to know the guys. And he seems like the type of player that anyone would want on their team. He's kind of good in the clubhouse. He loves to hit. He loves to run. And his pitching has been, you know, better than average. And sometimes he has a terrific game. And you just kind of look at him and you feel for him. You know, I don't know how old he is. He's, you know, probably pushing 30. And, you know, I like him.
All right. So you are, we're at the All-Star break and we are now, we're about 90 or so games into the 2013 baseball season. And your Chicago Cubs are 15 games behind the first place in dreaded rival St. Louis Cardinal.
Right.
How does that make you feel heading into the second half of the season?
Well, the best possible result of this season would be, are we potentially dangerous as a baseball team? Can we rise up and sting some contenders? 'Cause the whole option of being a contender ourselves was more or less thrown out the window a year or so ago, or 2 years ago, or 105 years ago. Who knows? what you really are looking for is anything interesting to watch, and are we a dangerous team? And I think we're showing signs of being a dangerous team. So right now I'm pretty satisfied. I don't like the fact that the Cardinals, I don't know how the hell they do it every year, but it's their organization, obviously. And I don't like them. You know, that makes me feel like, you know, I wish it were Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh's a much better feel-good story for me.
But speaking of your organization, you guys went through somewhat of a complete turnover a few years back when ownership changed hands and you brought in an entirely new front office with Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, and so now you've got all this optimism surrounding the front office, and hopefully you've got an owner who's going to be willing to spend. What would you say that Cubs fans remain optimistic? Are they going to be willing to give ownership and Theo a chance, or is patience running out already? Only year two, or is this year two or year three?
I think it's year two, and I think that for the most part we're optimistic. We have to be, otherwise, you know, why are we fans? But there's all this guarded optimism, like, you know, no one's sure what they're talking about, I think. You know, they're kind of like, we put this in their hands, or the owner put it in Epstein and Hoyer's hands, and we're going, okay, well, we'll try this one. We'll try this way. I think their pedigree is probably, you know, speaks for itself. They seem to have a good idea, but nobody's really an expert. You know, there's a lot of talking heads on TV, and there's a lot of, you know, phone-in guys, and a lot of people, offer their opinions, and you realize everybody's right or nobody's right. And, you know, talk is cheap and we'll see how it goes. You know, it's been a long time. My entire life, they haven't gone to the World Series you know, my parents' life, they haven't won one, you know, so it's, show me what you got.
Now, speaking about, just having owners that'll spend, do you think that, actually the way to start, attracting more higher end free agents or, and spending that money on those players is by, investing in, because I know there's been all sorts of, conversations and litigation regarding updating certain aspects of Wrigley Field. Where are you on all that? And do you think that'll make a difference as far as improving the quality of the team on the field?
I want to say yes, because you want to be able to attract people who to whom that makes a difference. You know, like, but you, in the long run, it's got to be someone, in my mind anyway, who is so jazzed about being on the team that finally goes to the World Series and wins it, that the infrastructure of the stadium and the surrounding area, shouldn't make that big a difference. I realize that it can when you, especially when you're attracting young kids, you know, out of the, you know, Caribbean or, you know, Turkey or wherever they get them these days, that may make a difference. But in the long run, I think it's got to be somebody who really wants to win for the Cubs and be on that team that wins it.
I, you know, the, just mentioning all the changes to Wrigley Field that are proposed. And at this point, they've only, secured passage of the Jumbotron, right? Didn't that happen recently? They agreed with the neighbors to build the Jumbotron. Is that true?
Yes, they did. So they got the approval. The approvals are in place. But there's counter lawsuits now coming from, you know, various quarters, but at least they got a foot in the door with it.
But then there's all sorts of talk about redoing the clubhouses, putting in perhaps more luxury boxes, investing in the surrounding area, you know, maybe building up some stuff around the streets that surround Wrigley. And we talked about the new ownership in the front office with Theo and Hoyer, and those are two Red Sox guys. Their pedigree is from Boston, and Boston, when they switched ownership in the early 2000s, they, as you know, went through a very similar facelift where they redid all of Yawkey Way and improved their grandstand, added seats above the Monster and also of the right field, and did a lot to attract fans back to the park, and that all culminated with putting a winning product on the field, and then we all know what happened in 2004.
Right.
You have to wonder, I mean, if a lot of the optimism is just in the sense that it seems as if the Cubs are pursuing a very similar change of history, and you've got to be somewhat patient.
Yes, you do, and I think it's going to happen, and I welcome it. I think it's, you know, let's do it right. Let's make the clubhouses, you know, up, get the clubhouses up to speed, get the area around Wrigley Field, you know, do it right. You know, there's wrong ways and right ways, and everyone's going to have a you know, a vote on that. But it's, you know, quaint can only last so long, I think, you know, and it's gonna, if it's going to change anyway, let's do it and do it right.
Well, the people, it's funny because, you know, I grew up in New England, and I wasn't a Red Sox fan, but I was, you know, went to Red Sox games at Fenway, and the appeal of Fenway for me growing up in the 90s was that, you know, because the Red Sox weren't good. They were bad.
Yeah.
But I wasn't even a Red Sox fan, but you'd go because it was Fenway. But
yeah.
But the park was a dump, and it was uncomfortable, and if you were over 6 feet tall, you really had a tough time sitting in your seat for nine innings.
Right.
And, but there's, and, you know, remember there was talk and conversation before the Red Sox started winning and before they invested more money in Fenway, there was talk about building another Fenway somewhere in South Boston. They were just going to, you know, bulldoze the entire thing, and that didn't happen. Yeah, thankfully, because, you know, Fenway is a historic landmark, and they were able to turn around, and then their fortunes changed on the field. Wrigley's kind of the same thing to me. I don't have any emotional attachment to Wrigley. Certainly you do. But you go to Wrigley, and I'm not equating Wrigley exactly to Fenway. I've had more comfortable experiences at Wrigley than I have Fenway. But you do get the sense that, you know, you're sitting in these seats at Wrigley, and sure, it's a blast to the past, but you wonder if it's more about the amusement and the link to the past than it is about the actual product in the field. And then it comes down to, and I don't know whether or not you think this is right, because you're a Cubs fan, you probably are going to disagree with this. My perspective of a lot of Cubs fans is that you continue to be the lovable losers, where it's still all about, you know, the atmosphere and the and the party-like atmosphere and the bleachers, and that, hey, you know what? It's really not about winning for us, because it's more about celebrating this landmark, which is Wrigley, and about the team and about enjoying the North Side. And it's almost like misery has company.
Yeah. Well, you have a very strong point there, because we've learned what's the adjustment that you make when they haven't won the World Series in over 100 years. You start pointing to the. Yeah, I mean, you start becoming like a fan of the what was the Mets team that lost 120 games, you know, with Marvelous Marv Throneberry and a bunch of the misfits that played on their team. And you start, you know, kind of idolizing the misfits, you know, like we have a every Cub fan of my age anyway remembers all sorts of goofy players that they pinned their hopes on, like Adolfo Phillips, and they remember the Lou Brock trade, Brock for Broglio. They remember, Di Fondi and Ed Boucher, and then a whole bunch of retreads that they tried to bring in, like, Harvey Keene and Gene Freeze, and, you know, all of these people at the end of their careers. I think the Cubs even had Robin Roberts at one point, like his last pitch was as a Cub, which is totally embarrassing. But so there is, and that plus the fact that Wrigley Field is the anchor for the neighborhood. If Wrigley Field wasn't there, that neighborhood would have a hard time being as successful in terms of certainly the taverns, but also a lot of the real estate value. So if Wrigley Field goes from that neighborhood is going to have a tough time. So. And also the identity of the Cubs is that neighborhood. There's when I was growing up, I can't remember what they called the area where Wrigley Field is now. I think like Lakeview or something. But now it's Wrigleyville because it's so successful. It has its own identity. So it's going to, you know, that's the draw. And as a Cub fan, you have you hope you have a hope and hopelessness kind of built into the same set of expectations for the team year by year. If they're not going to be good, let's at least make them entertaining and kind of goofy. You know, is like a Carlos Marmol kind of goofy. You know, you don't know where his pitch is going to go. Right.
Well, look how that worked out for you.
That worked out great, right? And they had him signed long term. Well, and then, you know, watching Alfonso Soriano play left field, it's not. You know, yeah, he's hitting right now and everything, but watching him play left field and they're saying he's made some real great improvements. Well,
so how do you,
the ball's hit the left field, we hold our breath.
So you're clearly, I would say that there are a handful of Major League Baseball teams that are bona fide national brands.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you'd say the Yankees, you'd say the Red Sox, you'd say the Cardinals, the Dodgers, and you'd say the Cubs.
The
Cubs are a national brand, and does that, you may or may not care about that identity, but that may, being that the Cubs are a national brand, they obviously attract now fans from across the country, and people come to Chicago to see Wrigley, and I wonder if you look at those people as, are they similar to you, and will you care? I assume all you care about is winning when it happens, if it happens.
Yeah.
But will you share those moments with those fans the same way that you will those people that have been with the team for generations who have just suffered through nothing but, you know, grandparents, like you said, your parents haven't seen them the World Series.
Not too much. They get a high five and smile back and everything. But the people who have really gone through it, I'm going to be in tears if they ever win it. So, and I'll be inconsolable. I'll be, you know, like off somewhere all by myself. And I will have
in a dark place.
And then I will probably call up my best friend, Chris, who has suffered with me, and will start laughing hysterically about how funny and stupid the whole thing has been. And I think what it does to be a fan this long and suffer this long is it kind of puts it all into perspective. You know, the statistical numbers don't mean that much. The you know, the baseball language doesn't really mean that much. It's more than, you know, it's more than baseball and less than you know, the importance that a lot of people put on it. You know what I mean?
What I'm interested in seeing, if it happens, is how fans or how the brand changes. Because you remember the Boston Red Sox were, I would say, their appeal was universally, except for in New York, but people wanted to root for Boston because they had this god-awful losing streak and they just couldn't win the World Series. And then when they put a good team on the field and they came close and then they finally won in 04, you know, and their popularity did continue to rise with certain segments of the population. There were a lot of baseball fans who kind of turned on the Sox because now they were on top and now they were winning. And then it was kind of like, God, they and their fans are annoying. I wish they would just go away. It would be really interesting to see if that happens with
totally understandable. And I think that's a fear. That's a definite fear because I, like you, was like rooting for Boston to get that World Series win. I was really happy for them. And then the years go by and they're real successful. They're always in contention. They won another one, you know, and all of a sudden you're going, all right, that's enough of Boston, please. You know, and then they're going, you know, all this Red Sox nation sweeps the country and you're going, yeah, okay.
You obviously misunderstood me. I said that there were a lot of people in this country who were pulling for them.
Yeah.
I never said that I was. I can never forgive the Boston Red Sox for my grandfather was a lifelong Red Sox fan and he passed away in 2003 and he never saw a World Series. And
yeah,
then they went in 04 and so for my grandpa I can never. It's amazing how sentimental we make these things, but I can never forgive Boston.
Yeah. I would be in your shoes, except my father always thought baseball should be played. He thought baseball should be a 3-inning game where everybody bats, you know, once through the lineup, you get nine hitters up and you bat them three times. It should be three innings.
Your father he
had no patience for it.
I was going to say your father has the attention span of Americans today, and in fact, that might be the way we go nowadays with baseball and trying to encourage more young people to watch the sport. Because really, when you go to the parks, it's not even so much about the baseball anymore; it's about the surrounding amenities. You do hope with any changes Wrigley makes that they don't shift the focus too much from the field, because it is still a special place to go and watch a game. Okay, so. Now here we are in 2013, second half of the season's coming up. Would you trade anyone of value if you were the OF scene? Or would you try to hold on to someone like Matt Garza in hopes that you can re-sign him and then he becomes, with Jeff Samardzija, the top of your rotation for 4 or 5 years and you can start to put a winning club on the field behind them with Castro and Rizzo and some of these young guys you have coming up? What would you do? Trade him?
For Garza, I would, I'd have to be more knowledgeable. I really like Garza, but I also think Garza is a little bit more fragile than people realize. He's had a injury-plagued Cub career, in my estimation. I would trade him now that he's got significant value. And only because I think I think we could probably get something for him that would last longer than Garza. I do like him though. As a guy, he's another one of these guys. Like I was saying, talking about Travis Wood, he seems to enjoy himself all the time. It's really fun to see him, in the clubhouse and pitch. And he's had some great success lately, but, I think we should trade. I mean, as you know, being putting my business hat on, I think he should be traded for some prospects. But you know, I want to have it sooner than later. You know, I'm anxious, and they're saying, you know, 2015, 2016 or something like that with these young kids. But I also think, hey, let's put something on the field that we can watch and give me somebody that's less than a year away or ready right now for Garza so that we can have something to watch.
Why, just looking at some of the statistics, Alfonso Soriano is having a pretty decent year except for his batting average, but yet Cubs fans never really totally embraced him, huh?
Yeah, because he really can't play left field that well. And I think
he couldn't play second base that well either.
No. I wasn't really paying too much attention to him at second base when he was a Yankee or whatever. But I don't know. I would prefer somebody with a little bit more baseball savvy. He's got a great arm too. That's the other thing. You know, he's thrown out a lot of people from the outfield. He's got a lot of outfield assists, or at least in the last few years he had. But I would still opt for somebody who is a wall crasher and has a higher average, and then trade him for somebody, you know, some decent power hitter at either third or somewhere else in the outfield. Right field needs addressing as well as left, so, and probably center too. I mean, our whole outfield is, you know, we got to get that straightened away. Put our power in the outfield and power and average in the outfield. And
so what you're saying is you're a few more years away.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Although, you know, we've got these guys like Scherholz and Sweeney and can't remember who else is, DeJesus, who are having fairly decent years, but, depends on how big the talent pool is too. You know, Jesus, there's 30 teams and, are we going to get all the good guys? I don't think so. So we've got to get guys that are baseball players, you know, know what base to throw to, know how to run, know what, how to hit behind a runner, you know, that sort of thing, know how to take a walk. How many of those guys take the place of the bona fides, your guy in Baltimore, that Machado guy?
Manny Machado, yes.
Yeah, he's 20, you know.
He's 21, just yeah. 21.
So those are rare. There's only a few of those guys, I think, that are out there that are going to go around. But, him and the kid Trout on the Angels, too.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Right. So the
I want one of them.
Yeah. Well, you can't have them.
Yeah.
Keep waiting. All right. So the last question is going to be, the Chicago Blackhawks just won the Stanley Cup championship.
Yeah.
And we could talk at length about, you know, how many Blackhawks fans there are in Chicago compared to Cubs fans, but something like 2 million, 3 million people showed up to Grant Park and celebrated the Blackhawks Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
If and when the Chicago Cubs do win a World Series championship, how many people will show up Michigan Avenue, Grant Park, to celebrate their parade?
I'm not sure the city is
and,
ready.
And will you be one of them?
Probably. And I'm not sure the city, after they win it, I'm not sure the city would then be wise to hold a huge celebration, because I think it'll be happening spontaneously anyway, and they'll go, they'll probably try to have a parade and that sort of thing, and then I don't know where they'd hold it. It'd be far greater than 2 million and that want to show up or that are out there celebrating. And it's like, I feel like Oppenheimer when they let off the atomic bomb for the first time. Nobody knows.
Wow, it's the first time we've, I think, interjected Robert Oppenheimer in a sports podcast. I think you just broke some sort of web record there.
Right. They'd have to hold the celebration in the desert, and everyone would have to be viewing it through heavy lenses. So
Alamogordo. It's fascinating about this. Now we go to history and we talk about, weren't the squash courts of the University of Chicago?
Yeah, I was under the squash courts under the Understag Field is where Fermi had his boys cooking and cooking the rods.
So maybe that's where they hold the parade. Although I don't know.
And that's a real thanks a lot to Chicago too, because they could have blown up the city with that one. They didn't know, you know, they were exposing these rods to the Geiger counters are going off and they're going, well, you know, see you around maybe. the whole city could have gone up, or at least the South Side or the whole university or whatever, how powerful the bomb was. But
it has served us well now, knowing that if in case of some sort of alien attack in the future, we should always run to our local Y or health club and search out a squash court.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
All right. Well, Uncle Bruce, I appreciate the time. Thanks for talking Cubs. And
John,
best of luck in the second half of the year, huh?
Yeah, well, luck has nothing to do with it, I think. We'll play it out, and we'll be, as long as we're dangerous, that's all I care about. Let's knock off a few contenders in the stretch run, show some promise, and I'll be happy.
Just not the Orioles.
No. They'll never face the Orioles.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot, Bruce.
Take care, John.